Welcome to Jury Duty. I'm your host, Chris Terracone. Season 8 of Jury Duty explores the trial of Alex Murdoch, a member of one of the most powerful families in South Carolina, who is accused of murdering his son Paul and his wife Maggie, with the purpose of covering up a multitude of alleged crimes including fraud and homicide. In our last episode, we concluded our look at the direct examination of FBI Special Agent Matthew Wild, a cell phone data analyst, as he described the information maps from his digital forensics report. In this installment, we conclude our review of the testimony of Agent Wild, and begin our look at the testimony of Nathan Tootin, a close friend of Paul Murdoch, who is a law enforcement officer for the Walterboro, South Carolina Police Department. That's all coming up right after the break.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
It is the afternoon of February 10th, 2023, day 13 of the trial of Alex Murdoch. As we concluded our last episode, Prosecutor John Conrad concluded his direct examination of FBI Special Agent Matthew Wild. In the final moments of this questioning, Agent Wild, using data maps as visual aids, described for the jury the approximate locations of Alex Murdoch's phone in the days following the murders. As we begin this installment, defense attorney Philip Barber begins his cross-examination of Mr. Wild.
Good afternoon, Agent Wild.
Good afternoon, sir.
I don't think I'll have many questions. You know, this won't take long at all. We were looking at a lot of maps, and they had a lot of timestamps, and I think they're referred to as pings sometimes.
They're not pings.
What are they?
They're activations on the record. So whether they be incoming or outgoing phone calls, or those RTT activations, which are slightly different, or the other things with Paul's phone, those are like the iPhone location data records.
But we're looking at calls, text messages. Would a text message always make one of those timestamps?
No. So on Verizon, which all the phones in this case were, with Verizon, we're not going to get call detail record. We're not going to get location data with the text messages, just the way they're designed.
Okay. And I just wanted to be clear when we said that there weren't any more calls coming into Maggie Murdaugh after 7, that there were some text messages, but wouldn't, if there were, they wouldn't show up.
Correct. They wouldn't show up in her call detail records with cell tower information.
What would it look like on these maps if a call, well, let me ask this, do calls hand off between towers while they're still going on?
They do.
And what would that look like on these maps?
So it would look the same way it looks now. So again, when the call, before the call's even set up, so if my phone was on in this room right now, my phone is constantly scanning the environment. It's trying to find the tower and sector with the strongest signal. Okay, it's very much like sitting at the airport trying to find the best Wi-Fi to connect. So what happens when a call hands off between towers during a call is the records look like they look. It's still going to show the initial tower and sector that the phone saw as the best tower and sector at the time the call occurred. And then after that, let's say the call is an hour long and I drive from here to Columbia, you know, I'm going to hand off tower to tower to tower, but on Verizon, I'm not going to see that handoff in the records.
Right. And that I guess was my question, is you're just going to see that first tower. So if you're handed off like tower 1 to 2 to 3, you're not going to see on the same calls hits on towers 2 and 3 on this map.
Correct. You're only going to see the initial.
And do the coverage areas intentionally overlap to some degree to allow for handoffs?
Yes.
We saw GPS data for Paul Murdoch's phone.
Yes.
Did you have any GPS data for Maggie Murdoch's phone?
I did not. There was nothing in the location database for the time period that was in question.
Do you know why that was?
It's either something Paul was running on his phone that generated it, or a lack of something that Maggie wasn't running on her phone that did not generate it. I really don't know the answer to that.
I mean, so the answer would be that you don't know.
I don't know. Yes, sir.
And what about Alex Murdoch's phone?
There was nothing during the time period.
So You mentioned that you've testified as an expert in, I think, over 100 cases?
Yes, sir.
And some of those other cases, were you able to show phones moving together?
Sometimes we are, yes.
Were you able to do that in this case?
I did not do that in this case.
When you were doing the drive around to create that sort of coverage map, did you go onto the Moselle property?
I did.
Was that with the consent of Alec Murdoch?
Yes, I believe so.
Could we pull up slide 35?
Philip Barber directs Agent Wild's attention to the monitor.
Can you see the screen?
I can.
And I think the previous testimony was that this 10:06:31 call was the 911 call?
Yes.
I just want to ask about that timestamp because we heard from someone from the FBI yesterday the 911 call was actually placed at 10:06:18. So what would account for the 13 seconds difference between the two?
I guess it depends on the records you were looking at. There might be a slight offset between the records the other person was looking at and the records I was looking at.
And the 911 call center, of course, would have a timestamp on incoming calls.
Correct.
Right. Have you ever seen cases where there's a few seconds difference between those timestamps and this kind of records and what the 911 center might have?
Yes, sir. I mean, there's a difference between when you press the green button, and it usually takes a couple of seconds to connect on the other side.
And could we, on the ELMO, go to slide 56? And the reason I would like to do this on the ELMO is I think that the presentation was cutting off the bottom of the screen.
It was.
And this, can we see the top so we can kind of get context for what this is? So this was Alec Murdoch information, and this was on June 15, 2021, correct?
Yes, sir.
And do you know that was Tuesday?
I don't.
Can we scroll in so we can see the bottom? It says that activity after 2:33 p.m. indicates travel to Somerville. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Do you have any data after that? Is that the end of the data that you have regarding Alec Murdoch?
Yeah, there was other data after that.
And you have location data for Alec Murdoch after June 15?
I think so. I think
in this report?
Not in this report.
So in this report, I'm sorry because that's yep. You know, what we're looking at here.
Yes, sir.
Because I understand, of course, you have cell phone records. He kept using the cell phone, obviously, after the 15.
Yes, he did.
But for what's being presented to the jury, the last entry is, I'll represent, you know, Tuesday, June 15, is the end of what you have.
Yes, it is.
And he's going to Somerville.
Yes, sir.
And finally, there the last two or three slides, we don't need to show them. There was some information for some other people, C.B. Rowe, a Marty Cook?
Yes, sir.
Why were you looking at information for them?
I was requested to look at the information for them for the night of the incident.
Were you requested to ever look at information for an Eddie Smith or a Spencer Roberts?
Eddie Smith sounds familiar, but I'm not sure about Spencer Roberts.
According to prosecutors, there is evidence that Spencer Roberts received several unexplained check payments from Alex Murdoch, and that search warrants tied to those payments yielded illegal drugs, a trove of cash, and a handgun. Curtis Eddie Smith is a cousin of Alex Murdoch's who did odd jobs for the defendant. He currently awaits trial on charges of fraud and money laundering related to his activities with Murdoch.
Did you look at information regarding Eddie Smith?
Yes.
Do you have that information with you?
I do not.
You do not have the information?
I don't have it with me.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Prosecutor John Conrad rises for a brief redirect examination of Agent Wild.
Agent Wild, you were asked by Mr. Barber whether you've been able to pinpoint two phones together in other cases, correct?
Yes.
Generally speaking, what kind of data are you using when you try to have been able to pinpoint two phones together at the same time?
I mean, first of all, the two phones have to have activity around the same time. So we'd have to have calls at 9 o'clock on one phone and calls at 8:58, 9 o'clock on the next phone. That's the first thing we'd have to do. Second thing is it'd have to be indication the phones are traveling together or stationary at the same place at the same time.
Okay. And after 7:50 p.m., was there any Verizon location tower information provided by Verizon?
There was not on Maggie Murdaugh's phone. There was not.
So you wouldn't be able to provide any opinion as to whether her phone was near any other phone in the world after 7:50 p.m., correct?
That's correct, because there's no data to compare it against.
Okay. Perfect, sir.
No further questions, Your Honor.
With that, Matthew Wild steps down from the witness stand. The state next calls Nathan Tootin, a law enforcement officer for the Walterboro, South Carolina Police Department. Mr. Tootin is in his mid-20s. He sports short brown hair and wears a gray suit, a white shirt, and a burgundy patterned tie. Prosecutor David Fernandez handles the questioning for the state. He begins by asking the witness for some biographical information. Mr. Tootin grew up in Hampton, South Carolina, and graduated from the University of South Carolina in 2021 with a degree in criminal justice. Fernandez next asks Mr. Tootin about his work history.
And what do you currently do for a living?
I'm a law enforcement officer.
Okay, with what organization?
Walterboro Police Department.
All right. And describe your job responsibilities. What do you do as a Walterboro police officer?
I enforce the laws of the state and serve and protect.
You work in road patrol right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Nathan, growing up in this area, were you childhood friends with Paul Murdaugh?
That's correct.
When's the first time you met Paul?
Lifelong friends, very young age.
Growing up in Hampton, knew him as a kid?
That's correct.
Okay. All right, well, tell us a little bit about Paul. What do you remember about him? Tell us the kind of guy he was.
Paul was the definition of a good person and a good friend. He was very loyal, salt of the earth kind of guy, and would do anything for you at any given moment, no matter the time.
What were kind of things that Paul, you all like to do together?
We like to hunt, fish, really just hang out with friends.
Was Paul the kind of guy, kind of friend that you'd kind of call a reliable friend?
Absolutely.
All right. Was he the kind of kid that would be there for you if you needed help with anything?
Absolutely.
Did you spend a lot of time together with Paul through the years?
I did, yes.
Did Paul have a cell phone?
Yes.
Did he like to use his cell phone?
Yes.
How would you describe it?
He was on his phone all the time.
In addition to being on his phone all the time, was he the kind of guy that if you needed something or reached out to him, he was going to respond back to you?
That's correct.
Was he going to call you back if you called him if he missed the phone call?
Yes.
And would you expect him to pick up if you called him?
Yes.
Did you get to know Maggie also?
I did.
All right, tell us a little bit about her.
Maggie was probably one of the sweetest ladies I've ever met in my life. She always looked out for Paul's friends and was the second mom to me.
Alex Murdaugh nods his head back and forth in an apparent demonstration of emotion as Prosecutor Fernandez continues his questioning.
And having spent a lot of time with Paul, did you also spend a lot of time with Maggie?
That's correct.
Did you also get to know Alex?
I did. Dad?
And is Alex here today?
Yes, she is.
Can you tell me where he is?
He's sitting at that table wearing a blue jacket.
Mr. Tootin points to Alex Murdaugh.
And did you get to know him very well?
I did.
Through the years. Did you know the family before they moved their primary residence out to what we call Moselle? Did you know them before then?
I did.
Okay. Were you there when they moved or obtained Moselle and started using that as a residence?
I was.
When Moselle was first constructed, how many entrances and exits were there?
Just one.
And which one was that?
That was the one by the cabin, or one that leads to the sheds.
Okay. And the sheds, is that the dog kennels and the hangar area?
That's correct.
And the cabin, I think you referred to, is there a cabin on the at the front of that entrance?
That's correct.
Okay. Who put the mailbox in there?
I believe it's Maggie.
And tell us about that cabin. Tell us where it's situated and why you know so much about it.
My freshman year of college, Paul and I actually lived together at the cabin.
So yeah. it's like a small house, basically?
That's correct.
And where is it situated in regards to the hangar area?
A little bit closer to the highway.
How many feet or how far away?
100 yards, maybe.
And so you lived there, I think you said, for the summer?
It's just a semester.
A semester?
Mm-hmm.
All right. How would you describe yours and Paul's friendship? How would you How often would you guys communicate a day?
Just about every day. Every day, every other day.
Phone calls?
That's correct.
And texts?
Primarily phone calls.
And later in life, did Paul go to school?
He did.
Where did he go?
USC.
And that's located where?
Columbia.
And did you see him whenever he would come back into town?
I would.
Would he come back frequently?
No, sir.
At the college level? At the college years?
No, sir.
When would you see him? Would you see him in the summers when school was out?
Good bit.
All right. And I think you mentioned before y'all did a lot of fishing and a lot of hunting. Are you familiar with firearms in general?
I would say so.
Did Paul have any guns that he favored, ones that he kept on him and kept with him most of the time?
He did.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about, you know, however you want to describe those two guns.
The two guns that were with us most of the time was a black 300 blackout and a camouflage 12-gauge Super Black Eagle 3.
And the black 300 blackout, what was that firearm used for primarily?
Anything.
Did you use it for hunting?
I did.
Okay. What would you hunt with that gun?
Anything.
Did it have the scope? I think you said there's a scope on the top or some sort of sight. How would you describe that?
As thermal scope.
Meaning you could see heat?
That's correct.
Okay. And describe the Benelli shotgun that you just mentioned also. What did it look like, and how did you know it was Paul's?
It had a very distinct digital camouflage pattern, and he had a gun strap that he's used since I've known him. That's what stayed on that shotgun.
Do you know the differences between, so we hear, you know, Benelli Super Black Eagle models, and I think we've heard 3 and 2 and 1. Do you know the differences between the various models?
I do.
Okay. So when you look at it, they have distinctive features on them that would tell you whether it's a 3 or a 2 or a 1?
Very subtle differences, but yes.
But you feel comfortable that you know the difference?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. So.
Show you what's been marked as, or sorry, entered in evidence as State's Exhibit 88.
Permission to approach the witness.
Nathan, I'm handing you what's been marked and entered into evidence as State's Exhibit 88. You feel comfortable taking this for a second and now telling me if you know what it is?
I do.
Okay. There you go. Be aware of the muzzle.
Prosecutor Fernandez hands Mr. Tootin the first of 3 firearms.
This is Paul's rifle.
And you know that because you've used this a bunch of times?
That's correct.
I'll also now show you what's entered into evidence as State's Exhibit number 4. This is State's Exhibit 4. Do you feel comfortable taking a look at this for me for a second and let me know if you know which firearm this is?
I do. Right. Now the safety's off.
Mr. Tootin takes the second of the 3 firearms.
This is Paul's shotgun.
How do you know?
I've used it several times in the same camouflage pattern along with Paul's gun strap.
This strap in particular is Paul's?
That's correct.
How do you know this is a Model 3 Benelli Super Black Eagle?
Well, would you let me explain?
Absolutely.
So there are a few subtle differences, one being the forearm grip. The Super Black Eagle 3 has a slight flare or increase in curve. Another difference would be the trigger magazine port has an indention that allows you to insert shot shells easier. The Super Black Eagle 2 and previous models don't have that. Another difference would be the button that releases the bolt, which makes the weapon operable. The previous models, being the original and number 2, are circular, whereas this one is more rectangular. I mean, the easiest way to tell the difference is they're labeled 2 and 3.
Thank you. I'll show you now what's been entered into evidence as State's Exhibit 91. You feel comfortable handling this gun for a second? Let me know if you recognize what it is.
I do.
Recognize what this gun is?
Mr. Tootin takes the third firearm.
I recognize that as Buster Murdoch shotgun.
Okay. What model is this?
Super Black Eagle 2.
And you know it's a 2 because of the other features you just mentioned and pointed out for the jury?
That's correct.
Would you do that again? Tell us why you know that's a 2.
Like I mentioned earlier, the slight flare on the 3. This one is straighter, more narrow. Does not have the indention for the magazine port and the button. Circular.
And you said it was Buster's shotgun. How do you know that?
The Mojo sticker on the barrel.
The sticker at the top of the barrel there?
That's correct.
Familiar with it. Mojo.
That's correct.
Did Alex have a gun that he favored, a shotgun?
He did.
What was one that he favored?
That was a Super Black Eagle original black shotgun.
Are you familiar? Did Paul have a 300 blackout rifle prior to the black one you just identified?
That's correct.
All right. Were you familiar with what happened to that firearm, the original one?
I am.
All right. Tell us the story.
It was a party, and he had, there was a black 300 blackout and a tan 300 blackout. He had the tan one, and it got stolen from a party one night. It was stolen from a party one night.
You know what year that was, approximate year?
I'd say early 2018.
And that was the our firearm that was stolen was what color again?
A tan.
Tan. All right. At what point in the Mizell property was the, what year, approximate year, was the second entrance created, that one with the brickwork?
I'm not sure.
It was a few years, though, after they'd owned the property, the family had owned the property?
That's correct.
Was it common to use either entrance by the family to leave and enter the property?
Yes and no.
All right, we'll explain.
Paul and I would use, and friends would use the entrance by the sheds more, whereas Alec and Mackie would use the main gate entrance more.
If you all, and let me ask you, before we get to my next question, what the hangar area with the kennels, are you familiar with it?
That's correct.
Could you describe to the jury just the very basic layout of that area?
It was kennels as you were riding into the driveway. The kennels would be on your left. The shed or hangar would be directly on your right. There was another shed that they had built in front of the hangar, and there was a skinning shed for animals out back to the right.
And would you spend a lot of time down at the hangar area and kennel area?
We would.
Why would y'all hang out there? Well, why was that the kind of the collection place?
It's just a central location where everything was located.
Tools.
Correct.
And farm equipment.
Correct.
If y'all were spending time down at the kennels and someone was leaving the house, would it be common for them that someone, whether it's, you know, Alex or Maggie, to stop by on their way out leaving the property?
Yes, sir.
That would be what would normally happen?
Yes, sir.
With that, we conclude this episode of Jury Duty. Please join us on our next installment as we conclude our look at Nathan Tootin's testimony and day 13 of the trial of Alex Murdoch. Also, check out the crime story podcast, Night Raid, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you would like to listen to these episodes early and ad-free, head over to our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You can find more information about this trial on our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page or at crimestory.com. Jury Duty is created and produced by Carrie and Tholis. It was co-produced, written, and edited by yours truly, Chris Terracone. Music for this episode was provided by Strike Audio. Trial audio is courtesy of Law and Crime Networks. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next episode of Jury Duty.